November the 5th is getting closer and closer. We need to be preparing. How do you prepare? Get your sample ballot. Get your sample ballot. Your precinct committeeman will usually distribute that, and do some homework. You can use iVoterGuide.com for federal and statewide offices. On judges and amendments, it's harder. I would suggest you look in your state for a family institute or a family policy council. Usually they have voter guides and they'll help you with more local races. But also, you can do a lot. All you have to do is search the judge's name, the candidate's name, and you can find out who's supporting them, who's giving them money. What is their past like? What did they do for work? Just look for clues in the bios, even on their website, or even, you know, Wikipedia gets some things right occasionally. You can find out a lot about people by just searching their name. So do your homework. Please don't go into the voting booth and leave half the boxes blank. Just don't do that. Everything is important. Amendments change your constitution. As an Amendment 4 in Florida on abortion, abortion will be legal for all 9 months. It will be in the constitution, almost impossible to change. And you probably have amendments like that in your ballot too. So don't be lazy. You can find this stuff. If you don't know how to look on the internet, then ask your kids, ask your neighbors, but be diligent. Go in there with that sample ballot, armed and ready to vote, and check every single box intelligently and not just guessing. All right, November 5th is coming up, and I'll see you at the poll.
This might be crazy because I know she's not going to survive anyways, but I only have so much time left with her. Why should I cut it any shorter? She's safe in my womb. And at this point, I had been following a million pro-life organizations on Instagram. I've seen what an abortion looks like. And I said, I don't think I could bear to have her ripped piece by piece out of my womb and shorten the life that's already so short. Take her away from a spot where God has placed her in my hands, in my womb, where she's safe and she's warm and she only knows love and doesn't know pain. Why would I give her such a painful death when she's perfectly fine with me? I said, today is the first day that I felt her kick. I already love her more than I can even express. Not that I didn't love her before. I loved her so much before, but feeling her kick is just, my baby was in there and I couldn't bear the thought of having her removed.
That's just a random posting on the internet that I came across. I don't know the girl's name. I don't know her story, but if you can listen to that and not be moved, then I don't know what I would say to you to change your mind about the worth of a baby. Even though she knew her baby was evidently going to die from how she was wording it, what can I add to what she said? This is what our young women need to be hearing. They need to hear this. They have a different perspective from someone who's there. Someone who's there and is choosing not to take the life of their baby, even though they know the baby will not live long. It's just amazing. And that's what preborn does. It brings kind of a recognition to women that that's a baby inside of them. It kind of wakes them up. You know, I remember interviewing an abortionist a number of years ago, former abortionist, from Las Cruces, New Mexico, and he told me the story of how things changed for him. He'd aborted thousands of babies, and one time, he had one daughter and his wife, and they loved their daughter. They doted on her, and somehow it just never bothered him to abort babies. It was a compartment in his mind. They were having dinner one night, he and his wife, and they heard loud breaks outside and a crash, and they ran outside. He was first, and he saw his little girl, age 2, just broken in pieces. Broken in pieces by a car that hit her by accident. And he said it was in that moment, he realized what he had been doing. And that's what profoundly changed his life. And that's why I think if women can see the baby inside of their womb, as preborn provides through ultrasound, they will change their minds. I started with that today because I just felt it was so powerful. And as we hurtle toward this election, this is at stake. This is a huge issue because our girls, our young women, are falling for the lies. Hook, line, and sinker, not all of them, but too many of them. And so we need them to know the truth about abortion is that it does violently take the life of the baby inside of them, and that it does affect their lives for as long as they live. They may not feel it in the short term, but they will in the long term. So here you go. If you want to help, provide an ultrasound for $28, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Forgot to tell you that part. And you can always call us. In fact, if you heard that and have something to say, have a story to tell, you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. Or you can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on social media platforms of all stripes. And you can go to any podcast platform to listen to the show. AFR.net is home base, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever you like to go. And you can also listen if you just go to sandyrios.com. So we try to make it easy for you, and I hope that you'll listen and enjoy and share it with your friends. Well, today we're going to talk about, guess what? We're going to talk about the election, but we're talking to someone who you will know. If you've been a Christian in the Christian activist community, and we are activists. Well, I believe in actively sharing my faith, so I guess all of you should be activists. But on the issue of abortion, but not just abortion, it's history, it's the founding fathers, all of that. There's no better person in the country to talk to than David Barton. I cut my teeth listening to David Barton and buying his books, and that's a great thing, a great deal of what supplemented my own education on America's history. And so it was really fun for me to catch up with him at Pray, Vote, Stand in Washington and to just have a long talk with him about perspective of these years and the founding fathers again. And he was full of incredible information, as he always is. He had just come from leading a tour in the Capitol with Michelle Bachmann. And then that night he spoke at the final event at Pray, Vote, Stand. I don't know how he did all of that, but he did it. And he did it beautifully. So you are in for a treat today. Stay tuned for this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. It's quiet here on Radio Row at Pray, Vote, Stand, because this is the end of the day. It's the last night, and the speaker tonight is actually making time to spend time with us. And I'm very grateful. Dave Barton, the founder of Wall Builders, a legend, really, for Christians in this country. David is an author of so many books. I think of Original Intent, which, you know, that was one of your first, wasn't it, David?
It was. It was an early book. Yeah. You know, it was originally called Myth of Separation. Then we updated it to Original Intent. So, yeah, it was an early one.
Have you read what Wikipedia says about you?
Lately? Oh, yeah. And they're the nice people.
Oh, really? Are
oh,
they
yeah.
now?
Oh, yeah.
You mean as opposed to Southern Poverty Law Center?
And a whole bunch of others.
And a whole bunch of others?
Even yesterday, big New York Times piece out, so yeah.
Seriously?
Oh,
about
yeah.
you? What were they? What clever thing did they have to say yesterday?
Nothing original. It's the same thing, just rehashed and gone over. So
yeah.
I mean, there are groups that literally, no exaggeration, spend millions to make sure that we have high negatives. So if you look up something online, you're not going to like me. I don't even like myself when I read it online.
Well,
so.
Yes, I know. I know a little bit about that. And Wikipedia, this was one of their phrases. There were lots of them. You promote pseudo-history, David. Did you know that? You just made it all up.
You know what's so interesting is we have two world-class museums in Texas with about 100,000-plus original items from founding fathers. And it's like, we made it up, really? We have the originals of all these, and we made it up? It just doesn't fit their narrative, and so that's what they claim.
Hey, are you still... I'm glad you said that, because I was going to ask you about your library. You just filled in the blanks. Are you still finding things?
Oh,
like rare
my
finds?
Goodness, yes. Absolutely, yes.
Liked?
All the time. Well, there's three collections that have come together. So I'm really good friends with Glenn Beck. I run a nonprofit for Glenn Beck. And then we have, Glenn's got a massive collection. For example, Glenn just bought the entire archive of the Roe v. Wade case from Linda Coffey, who was the attorney that carried it all the way through the Supreme Court, everything. Wow. So she had intended that to go to Planned Parenthood. We said, no, that needs to be in our hands because we can interpret it a whole lot better and show you how bad it was. So Glenn's got stuff like that, just amazing things. Then we, in the nonprofit Glenn has, is called American Journey Experience. And so we have a large museum there with, we got George Washington's eyeglasses. We've got George Washington's company, original stuff. And so it's probably the largest pilgrim collection in America, about 1,300 items out of Jamestown and Plymouth. It's just a massive, I mean, it's a fun place to go see. So we have tours all the time going through the libraries. And then we have the Wall Builders collection. And so our collection is a whole lot of the documents and the Bibles and the books. The bigger collection, American Journey, is the bigger artifacts. I mean, really big things, cars and et cetera.
Where is that?
It's the one, American Journey Experience, is in Las Colinas, which is North Dallas. And okay. Then over in West Fort Worth is Wall Builders. So both of them are about 40 minutes from each other. And okay. So people see both of them because they have very different collections. But we all collaborate together. So with that kind of stuff, we're always getting new. We just got the original copy. Cecil B. DeMille, when he did the Ten Commandments movie,
yes.
We got the Ten Commandments that were his. We have his Ten Commandments that he did at the movie. It's really cool stuff. So that was a great movie. He loved it. He made a big deal out of those Ten Commandments. So we have everything from entertainment through founding era. We have the Bible that landed on the moon with Apollo 14. Actually, we just got from NASA, when Mercury 7 went up, they had a duplicate space capsule of that, and we just got that space capsule from NASA. So that's the larger stuff that's over at the American Journey Experience. And then the book stuff and the documents and handwritten letters to the founders we have. And so saying we make that stuff up, it's like, no, we've got two of the larger museums in the country, and we don't have to make it up because we've got tens of thousands of pieces of original history.
When I was a kid, my dad used to read classic comic books to me. You remember those?
I have a collection of them. I think they're the best things ever. I love those things.
That's how I fell in love with history.
Yep.
Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln especially, because I was from Illinois. And then when I was a kid, we actually learned history. We had great teaching, you know.
I wasn't a literature guy, but that's the way I read literature, was in the classics. I
go through
Charles Dickens.
Yeah.
Because I get the book. That's cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love those.
I do too. And that's what really, you know, turned me on history. But did you ever dream in a million years when you started this endeavor that you would have be at this point where you'd have what you have? Did you ever envision that was a goal of yours to collect all of that?
You know, it's not that. What I didn't dream on was the violent, virile reaction to truth when people see it. And that's what I didn't expect. I thought it might be surprising to people, and they might not know it, but it is truth. And for people to look at it square in the eye and say, no, that's not real, you go, no, wait a minute. Here's the rich. So what surprises me is the lack of love of truth that we have. And of course, back in Thessalonians, it says, if you don't have a love for the truth, he will send you a delusion. And I think that's where America has got a lot of delusions now, believing a lot of stuff that is not even common sense. And then also the way the church is split over truth and how many attacks come from Christians over Christian heritage and history, I think that's been more surprising for me than anything else. People that should be your friends. But then again, you know, look at the people who sold out Jesus. It was the guys who ran with him. So it shouldn't be a surprise that religious people are not always the best people. But that's
religious
the bigger
people.
Surprise.
That's the key to that.
It is.
That phrase is religious, not believers who love the word.
Yeah, non-biblical Christians.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Non-biblical Christians.
Exactly. All right, you just came from leading a tour. How many tours have you led, David Barton, in Washington D.C.?
We've been doing tours probably about 30 years now. And the ones we do all have to be set up by congressmen. So they're private tours of the Capitol, the congressmen. I would say we probably do 20 to 25 a year.
Oh, my goodness.
So
I didn't know you were still doing that many.
Yeah, it's...
Do you ever now see something on the tour you didn't see before?
Well, yes, actually, just a couple of years ago, one of my friends, Daniel Dreisbach, professor at American University.
I know him, yes.
Dan's a great guy. And so he's working stuff, and we have so many times stopped and gone through the paintings. And there's the painting right outside the House chamber of the Constitutional Convention, 39 signers. Christie did that. It's a terrific painting. It's 20 feet high. It's 30 feet wide. And he identified accurately every person in that, and it's great. And down in the right-hand corner is one of the tables that they're leaning on, and they've got papers on it and books around. And I had never noticed that it was an open Bible open to Matthew 6. And that's the Constitutional Convention, and there's an open Bible in the middle of the Constitutional Convention. As many times I've been through the Capitol, I'd never seen that until Dan sent me a picture of it and said, look at this. And it's like, oh, my goodness, how can you see and not see? You know, to use a phrase from Jesus. But that was shocking. That was surprising to find that as many times as I've looked at that, I've never seen that Bible that's there. And it's very easy to see once you look at it.
David, this is such a weird time. I have to say, when I was young, I lived in Berlin, Germany. It was in the 70s, and the country was in turmoil then. I was there when Nixon resigned and during Vietnam and all, and the wall. I used to travel through Checkpoint Charlie and go into East Berlin. I say all that to say, because America was not held in high regard then. I was young. I dressed in bell-bottom red, white, and blue stripes. When I went to East Berlin, I go through Checkpoint Charlie and wear red, white, and blue bell-bottoms and patent leather shoes with stars and stripes on them. And I had a really good black friend, and we would go together. So we were quite a spectacle, which is kind of silly, but I was just, honestly, I loved my country, and I was just out and proud, I guess. So today, we're in a very hostile environment in D.C. You know that. And a lot of places in the country, and as you can see, I'm dressed very patriotically, which you usually are too, with your hat and your boots. It's interesting the looks you get in America when you dress like this. We used to wear red, white, and blue stuff and just enjoyed it, all the fashion of the beauty of the flag. Things have changed so much. Did you ever in your life think this would happen?
No, but I understand how it did happen. And just looking at education, I mean, there's nothing that we're facing in the country right now that's not the result of what we were teaching 20 to 30 years ago. Education got away from us a long time ago. We're seeing the gender stuff now. It's been in there for a number of years before it ever surfaced. And so one of the interesting things to me working with, we have a network of about 1,000 state legislators that we work actively with. And so I think a year or two ago, we monitored 152,000 pieces of state legislation. So we see what's going with educational reforms and et cetera. And what's striking to me is in education, you have tests on courses. And what you want to do is the teacher will teach the test. So whatever course has a test is going to be taught by the teacher. Well, they got rid of of testing on history about 25, 30 years ago. And so it's no longer something you test on, so you don't teach it because you got the STEM, the science and the math and engineering. And so they test on that. And so what we have seen over the last 20, 25 years is an amazing change in the way we present our country. And history always helps define who you are as a person, what you like, what you don't like. You remember back in history, you remember back Checkpoint Charlie. You have those memories. But if you've never been exposed to history, and if what you've been exposed to is not true, and I've come to the place now where I think the number one object of education should be to teach you to read. Because if you can read, you can feed yourself. If you can't read, you have to rely on everybody else what they say. The second most important one would be history. Because it shows you what works and what doesn't work. And if you don't know that, then you'll be where we are now with 75% of college students, 71% of millennials want to throw away the free market system and go to socialism. It's never worked in the history of the world, thousands of times, but they don't know that because we don't study history anymore. Right now, of the top 83 universities in America, 70 of them no longer offer any course in American history if you're a history major. So you're now going through and getting a history major in college without having a single course required on American history.
Oh, that is really amazing. I didn't know that. You know, when I was in school, you had to pass a test, not just take a course on the Constitution and on the Declaration of Independence and all of that in order to graduate from the eighth grade. And if you didn't pass, you didn't graduate.
Let me throw this one at you. Working with state legislators again, a lot of them are concerned about graduation rates and getting those rates up, et cetera. So when you look at immigrants who come into the United States, if they come in and they've never even heard of U.S., they came from Timbuktu somewhere, they landed off Mars, who knows? They got here, never heard of the U.S., so they want to live here. Within 3 months, you can take an immigration test, and that qualifies you for citizenship once you meet your time requirements.
In 3 months?
Within 3 months, you can do the test. Now, to become a citizen, you have 5-year residency.
Oh, okay.
But you take an immigration test, and within 3 months, you can knock that out.
Okay.
So the immigration test, and right now, 91% of immigrants pass the American immigration test. It's a 3-month course if you want to go through it. And so 91% passed. So what Arizona did was said, we need an X exam for high school students. Why don't we use the immigration test? Because that's basic. Those are people who have never lived here. They don't know anything about us. They're just telling them. And only 7% of high school seniors could pass the immigration test. So kids who have lived here their whole life in America know less about America than immigrants who have been here 3 months. And so now there's 7 states that now make the immigration test their exit
really?
Exam for the state. Yeah,
really?
That's become an exam. And that's a basic. So what you're looking at, and this is, you know, every year we have Constitution Day, and so polling right now shows that 68% of Americans cannot name the 3 branches of government. Now grab this. 48% of elected officials cannot name the 3 branches of government. So how do you have a constitutional republic that you preserve the Constitution if you don't even know what Article 1, 2, and 3 is all about? It's really bad.
I have a story for you. I was at a women's something, muckety-muck gathering here in D.C., and I think the speaker was a former librarian of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, someone asked her, what's the strangest question you ever got? Just to explain, they're a resource for congressmen, senators all preparing speeches and trying to do papers and all of that. And it's an incredible resource. Well, she said, well, not that long ago, a congressperson asked me what Abraham Lincoln did when he left the White House.
Okay, there you go.
So that's where we are.
There you go.
That's where we are. I mean, it was, you know, the room was filled with laughter, but oh my goodness,
but you
that's
know,
horrible.
It's interesting. Congressmen are nothing more than citizens who went through the same school system.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Who want to run for office and who got elected because people like them. Doesn't mean they know any more. Oftentimes they don't know more. Because a lot of times the people that know the most don't want to get involved in stuff, and that's what's killing us right now. I mean, we just did a big poll with Barna, got the results back last week, and there are 80 million folks in America who are active church-going Christians, not just self-identified Christians, but they're church-going. And at this point, you have 32 million that say they're not going to vote this election. Now, if we've had close elections in the last 2 election cycles, they've been squeakers, and you've got 32 million sitting on the bench that won't even step on the playing field, that's a self-inflicted wound. So if we don't like where America's going, what happens if people don't like where it's going, and rather than getting involved and changing it, they keep backing away. I don't like that. I'm going to stay out of it. No, we need you. You need to step up.
You know, I think General Boykin's going to talk with you tonight on the stage, and I talked to him earlier today. And he's going to talk about being a warrior.
Yeah.
And how we have to be warriors. It is amazing. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. This won't shock you that I feel this way. The cowardice we see in Christians. And my theme has been for a long time, it's the culture of niceness. God, you know, Jesus didn't call us to be nice. Yeah, the fruits of the Spirit, yes, but not nice, because that's about our reputation, worried about what people are going to think about us. And I think a lot of people are not going to vote for President Trump because they don't want people, they want to be, it's a righteousness thing for them. It's like they think it's a badge of honor that they're too holy to vote for him because he's an unholy person.
So they have a choice. My son Tim often says they have a choice between Samson, who was not always the nicest guy in the Bible, but he did the right thing for God's people, and they have a choice with Jezebel. And they're going to take Jezebel over Samson, or at least not even take a choice. That's a really dumb decision. And by the way, you're not electing a president, you're electing a team. Because that president is a party, but you also have that in the House and the Senate. You have that. And if you think you may not like Trump, you may not like his behavior, you may not like his past behavior, you may not like his tweets, he may be whatever, he has given us the best judges we've had in the 20th century. And as a result of that, Roe v. Wade is now aside. As a result of that, we have more religious liberty than we've had in 60 years. We have so many good things that have come, and people look at the personality. This is not about personality. This is about policies. And you've got to look past the personality and say, okay, what kind of policies will I get? And the wokeness is going to be gone in many areas. There's going to be a whole different kind of judges that go actually read the Constitution. What a remarkable thing that is. There's so many things, and people can talk themselves out of it very easily. But you can't talk yourself out of the fact that you're going to stand before God and he's going to say, what'd you do with that country I gave you? Well, I didn't like the guy. That's not an acceptable answer. You don't get to sit it out. You have to be a good steward. You have to be involved. You will answer to God. There's no question about that. This is a stewardship situation. And I don't think and by the way, it's something you mentioned earlier about the cowardice. One of the things that struck me really about 3.5-4 years ago when they were tearing down all the statues, they tore down Abraham Lincoln statues because they said he owned slaves. How stupid are you? But that's American education. So what we saw at the time was that 77% of American Christians self-censored themselves because they didn't want to say something that would offend someone else. So they're going silent. And so the thing that I felt like the Lord just kind of hit us with was Revelation 21:8, where it talks about hell, and in hell there's whoremongers and there's adulterers and there's liars and perjurers and murderers. The number one item on the list was, it said, the fearful and the cowards. They go there before the murderers, or at least they're on the list before the murderers and the adulterers. And so being a coward is like number one on God's list of, you ain't part of my kingdom if you've got no backbone.
I just saw that myself a couple of years ago, David. It really struck me.
Yeah.
So I think, please, we just ask for people to be bold. We've just been spoiled. We're spoiled kids. Living in the lap of luxury. And at this point, I'm just saying to people and saying to myself, live in a way that you can give it all up. You can give it all up at any moment. Expect a knock at your door. Be willing. You can enjoy today because God doesn't, he wants us, he's blessed us. So there's no shame in that. But the shame is in not doing what's right because you're afraid you might lose it.
Yeah, that a love of the stuff more than a love of the principles is a real problem.
Yeah.
If you love the stuff he's blessed you with more than he who blessed you, now we got a problem. And he's got standards of righteousness. And he is real clear, government is his institution, Genesis 9:6, he creates government. And to walk away from that's like walking away from the family or the church or anything else. You just can't do it. It's his institution. You got to be involved.
I want to ask you a couple of other questions. Is there a good, besides you and Wall Builders, and I know there's a few others like that, Christian sources, and but mainstream, secular sources of good history. I've kind of given up on PBS documentaries, all of that stuff. I know too much history, and I get into it like in a minute, and I go, I'm not watching this. And the movies, you know, that they're creating on Netflix and all of that for other reasons. But the history's just so twisted.
There's some good professors out there. Daniel Dreisbach, Mark David Hall. They're both history guys. They both have great history works out there. There are some what we might call quasi-secular historians. But the way history is, it shouldn't matter whether you're secular or Christian. A true historian just tells the truth. So you're going to get David McCulloughs and those kind of guys.
Yes.
You know, that he's going to tell you the truth. He may not have the emphasis on faith that other writers should put there, but he's not going to twist it and tell it wrong. And so guys that go to original source documents instead of quoting each other, having the circular firing squad of quoting other professors, they actually go to original sources. There are several out there. And actually, one of the better histories of the United States was done in 1976 by a British historian, Paul Johnson, People's History of the United States. And so, you know, we still even recommend that as a good American history book overall. It's a multi-volume series, but he just presents it. And he's a British historian. He doesn't have an agenda for America. And that's the kind of historian you want. And there are some of those starting to reappear. We're seeing some that are going back to original source documents. But it's interesting, the culture in which we live, see if I can explain this. Primary source is what you want. So when you're in a trial, you're on trial, you want eyewitnesses. You don't want about those who read it in social media, those who heard it from their friend. You want eyewitnesses. And so that's all primary source, first-line testimony. That's what you want in history. You don't want somebody who lived 150 years later who's pontificating. You want the actual documents. So when you go back to that first line of resources, that is super important, and there are so one of the things we show students on Wikipedia in the summer times, we do one-week training program for students going to college because we know what they're going to get, but we can show them and let them handle actually all the original stuff they're going to hear about, and then they are grounded in truth. So one of the things is when it comes to Civil War and you deal with secession, 11 states seceded in the South, and 11 did ordinances of secession, but 5 of them did declarations of secession, which is like a declaration of independence for their state. Here's the reasons why we're separating. And so if you go on Wikipedia and look for the Mississippi Secession Ordinance, which is nothing more than just a document saying here's why we're leaving the United States and creating the Confederacy, When you get there on Wikipedia, it has a big warning up top. It says warning.
Oh.
It says warning. This document relies too much on primary sources.
Oh, does it say that, really?
It says that on the website. So we send students that and say, see, they want the professors to tell you what the professors think rather than what the document says. And that's the problem we have with America is you have to love the primary sources, whether you agree with them or not. You don't not agree. Whether you like them or not, you have to look at truth and say, you know what, that's truth. That's a primary source.
You know, I'm sure I learned this from you years ago, but the primary source thing, or at least the one closest to what the event, and not what people are thinking 100 years later. But I read just the opposite recently, that for George Washington's life, you know, you shouldn't go to those early ones because they were kind of deluded. They were in the moment, and they were sort of, they had romanticized him, and so that can't possibly be the way it is. And so you need to read the later sources.
In our arrogance, we think we know more than the people who actually experienced it and lived there and did it.
I know. One thing I saw recently that I just would commend, PBS documentaries, maybe, I don't know what the date, maybe before 1990, I don't know, but there was a Lewis and Clark special that was all primary sources, their words, their letters. It was so moving, David. It's like two parts. So I would say that that's still possible if you can find, but not recent documentaries. They're all slanted.
And you just hit something. They're all primary source documents, and it was moving, inspiring. It's an interesting thing. Our heart responds to truth, and when you hear truth, your heart recognizes it, even if it's an era. You've never studied Lewis and Clark before, but when you see the truth, it's like, that's really cool.
Oh, I loved it. I swear I would watch that again two or three, four times. I'm not sure. All right, you're speaking tonight.
Yes, ma'am.
Very shortly here. What are you going to talk about?
I'm going to try to remind people of who we are as a nation and why we've been special. George Washington's farewell address kept pointing out, and he emphasized this throughout, but he said, if you want political prosperity, you have to have a religion and morality. And we have a whole generation of people who want political prosperity, but they don't want religion and morality. And Washington made that point, and history has proven that point. And it's not just America. You can find this time after time. When you depart religion and morality, your politics becomes polarized, it becomes divisive, it becomes retaliatory, you have cancellation going on both sides, you silence those that you disagree with, you know, all the stuff that we're going through now, and that's because you don't love religion and morality. And so that's what I'm going to remind people of. I'm going to take them back and show them how it used to be. Most people have had so little American history that they have no clue that, for example, public schools in New Jersey in 1816, if you're in the second grade, first and second grades memorized the entire Gospel of John in first and second grades. Now, what adult today has memorized that? There's some, but that's not. But that was every public school kid back in 1816 New Jersey. You know, so it's like we think we're so smart because we have computers and technology. No, no, no. We're not using our brain near as much as previous generations did.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that the truth? And that's a whole other discussion, isn't it? How smart the founding fathers were and how smart, you know, people before them. And we've really become very dumb because we're not using our brains as we once did.
Yeah, but we changed our educational pedagogy in the 1920s. Progressives got education. They made five fundamental changes in the way we approach the philosophy of education. And for the first three centuries in America, we taught you how to think. Now we teach you how to learn, which is why, oh, I saw it posted. Oh, I heard. Somebody told me, and we're not thinking about, is there more to the story? You know, in a trial, you have prosecution, defense. You listen to both sides and make the choice. Now we listen to one side or the other. We're either a lynch mob or we're let them all go free kind of stuff because we don't have that thinking ability that we used to have in previous generations. And so that's a big deal. People have to get back to thinking. One of the ways you do that is questions. In the Gospels, Jesus asked 337 questions in the Gospels. He did not answer many of them, but it's asking questions. That's what we used to do all the time. Now we do multiple choice, fill in the blank, true, false. Did I, the teacher, tell you A, B, C, or D? Did I, the teacher, tell you this, true or false? And you're just repeating back what you've been told. We're not thinking about it, and that's a 20th century phenomenon that we got to get away from.
Among other things. So, David, always a pleasure. David Barton, the founder of Wall Builders, wallbuilders.com.
Yes, ma'am.
And he's got a radio show, podcast, a television show on YouTube channel.
Yes, ma'am.
And so many resources, books, and all of that. So if this is new to you, you know, this is a whole world of resources for your kids, for yourselves, for your family, and lots of videos about history. It's just great stuff. So, David.
Thanks, Sandy.
Thank you so much for making time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Good
Thank
to be
you.
With you.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices.
To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Abortions performed by Planned Parenthood were among the top leading causes of death in America, revealing the terrifying truth of the left's anti-life agenda. According to Planned Parenthood's 2022-23 annual report, abortions performed by the organization accounted for the top four leading causes of death. Think about that. Paid for by our tax dollars. And honestly, this freight train is going down the track so fast and so powerfully. It's really hard. It's going to be hard for us to stop this. And I think one of the best ways, I've said before, I'll say again, is preborn. Preborn, who is not part of the government, not part of the public debate or campaigns, but an organization that's simply providing ultrasounds for moms who are pregnant and doubting whether they should carry the baby to allow them to see their baby through ultrasound. It's an amazing process, and it actually works. When the moms see their babies, I think it doubles the chance that they will not take the life of their baby. You know, you can't beat those odds. If you'd like to help, $28 pays for one ultrasound, just one, and you can send however much you can afford. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from the morning show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
I want to ask about something that's happening in Georgia. Democrats are suing the state election board there over a rule change requiring counties to hand count ballots cast at polling places. If this rule remains in place, what do you think the impact will be on the election?
Well, here's what we know from the data. Hand counting ballots doesn't create more accurate results. It actually lowers accuracy. This is what we know. You are entitled to your own opinion. You're not entitled to your own facts. I've been down this road. People look at me and see that I won. They should not forget that I had to sue the state of Georgia just so voters could vote the first weekend of the runoff. And the numbers of people who voted that weekend was somewhere around the margin of my victory. And so this is how voter suppression happens.
Okay, so that's Senator Raphael Warnock from Georgia, who won a very interesting controversial election in 2020. But he's there, and he's saying, what, it's an election, it's a problem. Hand counting ballots is like a plot, a conspiracy against us. to, you know, conspire to have an unfair election. They're not accurate. I was just reading AP. AP has a story, April the 2022nd. And in France, they've gone back to the system, AP says, that's been used for generations. What is it? Paper ballots that are cast in person and counted by hand. So they don't use fringe voting machines anymore for a reason. And so, I'm sorry, Raphael. You know, when I was growing up, we always hand-counted ballots. In fact, I was charge of school elections when I was in student council. I know a little bit about hand-counting ballots. I did a lot of it myself. And actually, people are pretty accurate. There was cheating back then, but nothing that like we've seen. Well, let me just say this. We had results every night. You didn't wait a week for results. There were not all these disputes. There were some disputes through the years. I'm not saying none. I'm not saying that. But nothing like what it is, where we reach gridlock and we don't know for weeks. When we had hand counting, same day in-person voting, life was much more simple. In Florida, which they don't do hand counting, I don't think, but they supervise elections. Their elections are tight. You have to do voter ID. Imagine that. Can you imagine having to show your ID to vote? Well, some people can't imagine that, but most of us can imagine it easily because it's just what we do in this country and in a civilized world. You present, evidence to your ID to get on a plane. At the DNC, for heaven's sake, the Democratic National Convention, they had like three different forms of identity check just to get into the stadium in Chicago. So, but when it comes to elections, you know, we can't have that, nor can we have hand-counted ballots, and that's probably why we're in the trouble that we're in. And the last thing I want to play for you here is, David, you know, encourages citizenship, and so does Cleta Mitchell when she joins me, citizen involvement. And I encourage that from you, too. I just feel, you know, I realize that I grew up in a family that was very aware of what was happening in the political world and in the world. It was a discussion at our dinner table. And I want you to know, neither of my parents were well-educated. Neither of them. My father didn't graduate from the eighth grade. They're from Dust Bowl, poor Oklahoma, with, you know, 10, 11 mouths to feed, and reasons why they had to work on the farm. My dad went to the CC camps. So they don't have, you know, Ivy League educations. But somehow they caught that they needed to pay attention to the world, not just their little county in Oklahoma. Now think about that. My mother was very involved when she was a girl. They used to sing at political rallies. And they had differences in politics. So that would be like the stuff of the conversation at our dinner table, differences over candidates. So I grew up with that. My dad fought in World War II. We just learned to think about beyond our own interests. I think a lot of it boils down to that. Don't just think about your own things. I believe that's scriptural, actually. Each of you should not look upon your own things, but on the things of others. And then that translates, of course, to the Constitution and our founding fathers. They were quite clear that democracy would not work unless people were serious, took it seriously, and morality and religion were the foundations of the democracy. So we're losing, of course, morality and religion. That's slipping, but it's not gone yet. Nevertheless, we are responsible in a democracy to vote because it is our privilege. And we're supposed to be good citizens, aren't we? Setting an example? Aren't we supposed to take care of our families? Doesn't the Bible say that if a man doesn't take care of his own family, he's worse than an infidel? And that an infidel is like just a horror to in an Islamic community. That's where the word comes out of the Middle East about, you know, early Israel and the infidel, someone who's worthless. An infidel is a worthless person. You don't want to be an infidel. And that's what it says in the King James Version. If you don't take care of your family, you're worse than an infidel. And does that not apply to not caring about the debt you're handing your children and grandchildren? Does that not apply to transgenderism being forced and having our kids brainwashed to believe that choosing a gender is even possible? Shouldn't you care about that? Don't you want to stop that? That happens at the ballot box. We have clear choices this year. Tim Walz has made Minnesota a sanctuary state for gender-affirming care, meaning hormones for your boys and your girls, without your permission. Your grandchildren. Don't you think you have a responsibility? I'm asking you, I'm begging you to vote. Take your responsibility. Well, Lucia Frazier is a poll worker. I don't know what her position was, but she's from Georgia. When she testified before the Georgia State Election Board, and I want you to hear what she had to say. Here it is.
And I just want to say that just because you're working for a certain government entity does not mean that you're an expert, that there are plenty of regular citizens out here that are experts at what they do. And basically, the expertism is like numbers. So if you're really good at math or engineering and analysis, you could figure all this out. And a lot of people that are in these roles don't have that expertise. So I would dare to say that there are a lot of citizens out there that have more knowledge and more expertise than the people sitting in these boards and people sitting in any government entity. So that being said, it's something that you guys should take into account, that the landscape is changing. We're getting involved. We weren't involved before because we didn't feel like we need to. I always thought that the Constitution protected me, but now I know that's not the case. I have to protect the Constitution. I was not taught that in school. My civics class was, you know, didn't tell me anything about I can come and give public comment, or I can oversee the government's operations, or that any of the election data was all public knowledge. I didn't know that. And apparently it is. And a lot of people don't know that because the schools aren't teaching it. So the landscape is changing. We're involved now. And we're going to stay involved, even no matter what happens with this election. I see a lot of things that need to be changed. I've created rules because I saw things that need to be changed, things that are already there for us. But over time, because it's not being taught in the schools, people just got comfortable with all your materialism and you're not thinking about protecting your Constitution. The only way this country runs is with the people in it. It's designed to run that way. So I would ask that everybody, no matter what side you're on, just consider listening to the people that have risen up and have done the analysis. Thank you very much.
Lucia Frazier, testifying before the Georgia Election Committee. You heard her. I've never been involved before, but I didn't realize. I thought the Constitution protected us, and now we must protect the Constitution. We the people. And even no matter what happens in this election, we're not going anywhere because we're going to take back our elections. I encourage each and every one of you to adopt that, to do something. I always say, just do something. You can do something. You can tell people about, give them advice, talk about the election. Don't be afraid of doing that. You can certainly vote. That's minimal. Please, you have to vote. And those of you around, the friends that you have to encourage them to vote. Your children, explain to them why. Play this clip from Lucia. By the way, I forgot to tell you because I didn't care about this. Lucia's black. She's a black woman. Like, that makes a big difference. But, you know, it does to some people. So she has discovered, you know, that she can participate and that she knows more than the so-called election officials. And she's not going to abdicate anymore. So I'm just telling you, we need to get involved. Well, I'm finished. I hope you enjoyed this. I want to thank our sponsors. Timothy Plan is a place where you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.